Welcome to the Developing Your Football World podcast. Our guest today is Adam Pate, who is head of scouting at US Mondorf in Luxembourg. Adam talks to us about scouting, analysis, and working remotely. Enjoy.
Adam, thank you very much for joining us. How are you doing today?
Doing very well, thanks. Thank you for the invitation. It's nice to always sit down and talk football.
I'm really looking forward to it. So since I saw your LinkedIn post the other day about Luxembourg, and we'll get into that, but this is the kind of thing that I find really interesting, and the listeners do too. So let's dive straight on in, and I'm going to go to the back many years. You went to the University of Portsmouth.
I certainly did.
What was it called again? It was Latin American Studies, right?
Yes, it was.
So give us a brief overview of how you've gone from studying a degree in Latin American Studies to now being a scout and analyst and living in Luxembourg.
It's a weird and wonderful world that we live in. It certainly is. But, I mean, like most of us, you know, football's always had a part in my life. And as a youngster, you know, we're doing this just after the World Cup, and my earliest World Cup memories was of 86 in Mexico, and, you know, the Azteca and, you know, just the incredible atmosphere. And I remember the Brazilian team against Northern Ireland, and Jairzinho, I think was his name, the guy, the right back who scored the wonder goal against Pat Jennings was in goal that day, wasn't he, for Northern Ireland?
The boot from the corner of the box.
Yeah, it's just those early memories just stay with you. And I've always, since a young age, I've always been someone that's wanted to go overseas. And I was going sort of through the university profiles, the course portfolios whilst doing my A-levels, and I noticed this Latin American Studies course with the opportunity to spend a year in Latin America. I thought, I'll have some of that. You know, I'll have some of that. The rest of it didn't particularly interest me that much. It was about the year abroad. And the more I sort of got involved into it, and I read about, obviously, then the dissertation became a thing, and I spoke to the people there and said, we're more than happy for you to choose a theme linked to Latin American football. And I did a social study, shall we say, of Latin American football while I was over there. I was in Mexico for 6 months, went to a number of the clubs there, and I was in Costa Rica. Fortunately, I was actually on the same course as I think it was the nephew of Paolo Wanchop, who, you know, the small world that we live in. So I was given some insight into life in Costa Rica, but these are old stories. I mean, this going back now over 20 years. Well, when I was in Latin America, I was, you know, at Portsmouth, just graduated in 2004. So when you do a course like Latin American social studies, it doesn't really direct you into a career of sort. But it did give me Spanish language, and I already had French language and Italian language and German language from, you know, from my childhood. So I moved into teaching, and after a few sort of U-turns, I ended up in primary teaching. But I still wanted to go overseas. And once I got the qualifications, somebody introduced me to the international teacher scene, and I dived into that for a good part of a decade, you know. I'm still doing it now, but it's sort of my second, you know, it's my second life now. My first life is football. But for a good 10 years or so, I'd gone from teaching in Africa, teaching in the Middle East, and then I wound up in Ukraine in 2010. Took a passing interest in local football, not a huge one. The Euros in 2012 were a great time. to be there, as anyone who's been to an international tournament will, you know, to sort of testify that it's a brilliant thing. And after a while, I met my partner, Natasha, who is now my wife. And after a few years, we'd started, you know, we'd make a point of whenever we're going on holiday, we're taking a game wherever we were in the world, you know, and it's like, got to go and do this, got to go and do that. And after a few years, we said, we really need to visit more places around Ukraine. And we were at one place, we'd gone to a local game, Vera Zrivna, and she turned around to me. She just said, like, you don't enjoy teaching. Why aren't you working in football? Because when you're with football people, you're so much more relaxed. And I'm like, well, I can't make a living in football. I'm not a footballer. I've never been great at playing the game. She said, but what other jobs are there out there for you? And we kind of had a sort of rack of our brains. We came up with this project to almost like the bucket list, 92 club, groundhopper thing, but the Ukrainian style of it. And we travelled the whole of Ukraine in a few months, visited clubs in every region of the country. And yes, I've been to Mariupol Stadium. I've been to stadiums in the Donbass, all those places that, you know, we now see making headlines for other reasons. Went through being throughout that region. And after completing this project, some of the local football people in Ukraine got interested in me. They were like, we need to talk sport. And all of a sudden, some doors started opening up. And, you know, you always say, one thing I've learned now is that, you know, football is, it's a great industry when it comes to who you know. And very quickly, you can meet somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody. And all these doors start opening up. And very, very quickly, I was being introduced to the, you know, the Ukrainian equivalents of Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer and all of these guys who are, you know, on TV, you know, the guys who commentated the World Cup final on Ukrainian national television last weekend are personal friends of mine now, because very, very quickly, all these English guys who are interested in Ukrainian football, yeah, we need to talk to them. We need to find out what it is, why they like it. And they knew my story and they went, okay, yeah, we understand you're here. And there is a journalist who's becoming quite famous now because there's a lot of interest in Ukrainian football, Andrew Todos, sorry, who's got the Zorya Londonc page on Twitter. That's very active. We quickly connected and we set up our own media channel in Ukraine. It was called Ukraine Plus Football. And we've had guests. Rob Palmer came on because he'd been commentating on Ukrainian football. So he came on to talk. Adam Summerton from BT Sports came on because he'd been commentating on Leicester when they came to Ukraine. Russ Taylor, a good friend of ours, he loves Ukraine and regularly comes on from Sky Sports News. And yeah, a lot of guys like that. We've interviewed Sergey Rebrov as well, good friends with the Rebrovs. And yeah, we just had this huge exposure. But I couldn't connect with the clubs. It was always the media. And at the same time, I'd been sort of active on LinkedIn, like a lot of us are. And an old school friend of mine, Ryan McKnight, who set up FC Business magazine. He was the founder of that and now runs the Football Transfer Forum alongside Tony Chark. He saw me and Ryan go a long way back. And they were looking for some people to work on a project, and he knew I'd been doing more in football. So he said, come and apply, and we'll see what you're like compared to the others, but give it a go. And I worked on a project called Squad Plus, which was it was partly done with Jed Searson, S4 Scouting, and partly done by Tony and Ryan at the Football Transfer Forum. And it was about building a database, footballing intelligence on the leagues in England and Scotland. And we did it for a couple of transfer windows. It was a short run project. But Jed had said, if you help us with this, you can do your scouting courses with me. And Tony had said, if you help us with this, you can do your agency courses. So thank you very much. I did my agency courses, did the first two. Felt uncomfortable with the salesman side of agency work, but the scouting stuff really interested me. And Jed's courses were great for meeting people. I quickly met Nathan McCann, who was head of scouting at Wealdstone a couple of seasons back, and he turned around to me, and a guy called Max Sweeney went, I need some help. Could you help me out at Wealdstone? So we jumped at the chance. I was like, I'm in Ukraine, but I'm happy to watch footage. He goes, I'll send you the games. We've got all the video footage. I just need people who can watch it. And very quickly, we were clipping games. We were doing opposition reports for them for that season. But then Wealdstone cut back a bit on the funding. And Tom Fry, who had been working on this Squad Plus project with me, had taken over as head of scouting at Kingsley. So Tom reached out and said, yeah, we can get you to do a bit. We're doing a lot of talent ID. So if you want, I can send you the games and you can start watching them over there. I was like, great. I mean, it wasn't paying. So I was teaching all the time and I just sort of fitted it in around the teacher. And just kind of doing that and until this year when war broke out. And when that happened, we had to go. And I was invited from my teaching side to come to Luxembourg to help teach some of the, you know, the refugee children, first of all, who'd come across here. And I was like, let's see what Luxembourgish football's like. Yeah. And I'd gone on to Facebook and I'd found that all the BGL league was the top division here. The clubs have quite active Facebook pages. Their club websites aren't so busy and they're not so active on Twitter and the like, but Facebook is where a lot of the action takes place for the Luxembourgish teams. So I wrote to each one and I got a few responses and there were two in particular. Diffadonge, who'd been in the Conference League at the start of this season, they were talking to me and they said, yeah, we'd like you to come to the club. And I was like, okay, when should I come? Not this week, we're involved in Europe. Then not this week, we're involved in Europe. But Mondorf had wrote to me and said, yeah, can we have a chat on the phone? And so we had a very long phone call with the president, who said to me, look, I'm going on holiday, but I'd like you to come to this friendly. It was in late July, and you can meet the coach, you can meet the manager, and we'll all sit down together. And yeah, went down there, met everyone. They offered me the job then. We figured out quite quickly that some of the coaches spoke English. The manager doesn't speak English, but being Portuguese, he understands my Spanish, I understand his Portuguese, we can talk a bit in French. And so one of the coaches at the time was Italian, so we were talking a bit in Italian and we're kind of just throwing words around at one another, but we seem to understand everyone. One of the big things has been this year is the written reports have stopped. It has to be video reports because even whatever language you choose to write in, somebody ain't going to understand. So it has to be video reports all the time. So I've took a crash course on how to make video footage instead of the written reports, but it's quite quick to change. And yeah, it's kind of a lot of U-turns along the way, but this is how I've ended up in Luxembourg from Portsmouth.
Well, absolutely fascinating. And goes to show that no journey really is linear, and there's so many ups and downs along the way. And yeah, so much good stuff in there, from Paolo Wanchope's nephew to even with the languages. I wanted to ask you about that, and you kind of answered anyway about different languages you have to speak in Luxembourg. As I know, there's a bit of French, a bit of German, Dutch, and then they have their own language as well.
And they do, Luxembourgish.
So now you've got all that.
And yeah. I'll add in there as well something I didn't know until I got here, that there is a very large Portuguese community here, and this is one of the reasons why Luxembourgish football has grown in strength over the last 10 to 15 years from where it's, you know, it's sort of humble beginnings, is that now they've got the second generation of Portuguese youngsters coming through, and a lot of the league is dominated by Portuguese. Over half the league is managed by Portuguese managers. So, you need at least a smattering of Portuguese to get by here as well, especially in the south.
That's really interesting, but I've got no idea. I suppose Luxembourg is not a country that people tend to think much about, even though it's not really that far away.
It's Manuel Costa, who was at West Ham recently, the central defender. He was actually playing in the league here at the start of the season. He came for a few months. It was purely because the coach of the team was Portuguese. It was through a contact and came up from Portugal for a few months, played in the Champions League. And then when they got knocked out of the conference, that was it. He was done. And he's scuttled off back to Turkey or somewhere to play now. But we do get a few, quite a good standard as well. A lot of the sort of the youth players from Benfica and Porto and that, if they don't quite make the step, a lot of them tend to come up here because it's quite a safe community. There's a few Brazilians with Portuguese passports coming. One of the top strikers was playing in the Angolan league last year's Portuguese guy, but of Angolan descent. He's banging in the goals this year. But, I mean, also still a lot of French players as well playing here.
So these Portuguese, how much time until you're going to start to see that affect the national team? So I imagine if there's a large immigrant community there, then eventually you're going to get a second, third generation that'll be eligible to play for Luxembourg. Is there a bright future there?
Well, they was the under 21 tournament last. Was it under 21 or under 19 last summer, where Luxembourg made the final in Israel, the final stages, and beat England in the playoff round in the qualifications for the final tournament. So I think we're already at that stage. I've been in discussion with a few people, and the qualification group for 2024 is a very interesting one because it has got Portugal in the group, but the second seed is Bosnia, who, and I apologise to any Bosnians who might be listening, we know the team is on the slide. Iceland were the third seed, who are also on the slide from where, you know, sort of their heyday of 5-6 years ago. Luxembourg's the fourth seed in there. So if Luxembourg finished second in this group for 2024, I wouldn't be surprised. I won't be surprised if they're not, but it wouldn't shock me if Luxembourg actually got through this group in for qualifications that are starting in 2023.
That's really interesting. Just the other day, I was watching The Simpsons, and the episode had Homer go to Brazil to be a referee at the World Cup, and Luxembourg are one of the teams that are included in a gag. And I thought, what do these bloody Americans know? If
you're gonna not a lot.
You're going to put Luxembourg in there. Who advised them on that? And then hearing you say this, it might not actually have been that silly of an idea, particularly when it comes to Simpsons predictions. Maybe in the next couple of cycles, we'll actually see Luxembourg make it. That would be, I definitely admit to being wrong there.
Well, you look at the National League matches. They drew 3-3 in Istanbul in the last round, and it was a last minute equaliser for Turkey that stopped Luxembourg from getting the win there. And if they'd won that, they would have finished top of their group and been in the same in Group B alongside England for the next cycle of the Nations League.
Wow. Yeah. So, is there, what's the domestic league like? Are there lots of fans? Or is there?
No. It's amateur. The league is, it is surprisingly deep. There's five tiers to the pyramid here. And each league has around 16 teams. The third and the fourth tiers are regionalized. Then the fifth tier, there's just a few teams in that one. But yeah, over 100 teams in the country. When you think there's only 600,000 people, attendances are going to be low anyway.
We're still playing football on the weekends, so there's no.
Yeah. Problem. Yeah. I mean, Dude Lounge and Diffidange, probably the big two clubs in terms of attendances, just under 1,000, may go over 1,000 for a big game. At Mondorf, we're one of the bigger clubs with 600-700 coming in on a Sunday for it. Well, even in the Premier League, you can get games that are 100, 200 in attendance. I heard that during the World Cup, some of the attendances were down to two figures. So it's, you can see they rely on their committee people. Entrance is a box stand. It's 10 euros ago. There's none of this free entry or anything like that for people. People pay. It's a great experience, Luxembourgish football, I've got to say. They get the barbecue out even in the depths of winter. So the barbecue's on a go. They've got a few kegs on the side of the pitch ready for fans that want to come. It gets a nice atmosphere. There's a nice friendly spirit there. In true Luxembourgish style, the ladies are walking around with bottles of champagne and having glasses of that at a go. But yeah, it's like, you've got a mix of German football, the German football culture and the French football culture smashing together in Luxembourg and in this kind of friendly, small scale way. So it's has a nice vibe. The clubs try to be financially stable with Mondorf. It's a big part of it because it's the one club in the southeast Luxembourg, it's the only club in the top two tiers. So they want to be a viable route for youngsters coming through. And all the clubs here have youth teams that are connected to it. And there's quite a large youth structure across the country. So kids can go and play football no matter where they are and whatever their, you know, sort of social economic background is.
Well, what's it like to live there? Because you often see Luxembourg near the top of a lot of rankings when it comes to the standard of living.
It is the top. It is the top. It is a very bizarre country to live in, I have to say. Especially when you're sort of lower down the food chain. It's most of the houses here will go for over €1 million. It's very rare you find a house on the market for less than €1 million. So when they say that people here are millionaire, you know, everyone here is a millionaire, it's pretty much true if they own property. It's people have a lot of money, but it still has a sort of a working class background, especially in the south of the country. It's a huge coal mining region. So people, you've got that. It's at times sort of the culture there is very similar to Yorkshire or Lancashire of in the more working class areas of that part of the UK. And yeah, I find it's quite charming. Where my teaching job is in one of the main coal mining towns in Esch in the south. And yeah, it's a very rough vibe. But then everybody's happily splashing around 50, 100 euro notes to buy stuff and to buy a round of drinks and spend, you know, a fair whack of money for anybody isn't a problem here because it costs so much to live here, so people have that money. I was trying to explain because I was approached by people who don't live here, who, you know, quite often online when they see you're working for a club, they say, oh, Luxembourgish football, it's not so good. Get me in and I'll be really good for your team. And I have to say, how are you going to live here? You know, it's an amateur league. Players don't get paid a working wage because it's amateur. You need to do something else here. Secondly, because it's amateur, you can't have a work permit to work as a football here. You have to come here to work as something else. And then you can join a club to be part of here. And I'm here with my refugee status. You know, if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't be working here. So I'm taking advantage of the, you know, the difficult situation that Ukraine is in, and it's put my family in. And I have an opportunity here to build something. And, you know, we are building something that's quite exciting.
So saying about the coaches and players having to go to Luxembourg for reasons unrelated to football, because it's hard to get a visa, it's hard to support an income there in football because of the status of the game. That advice is useful for a lot of different countries as well, where I have a lot of coaches that will talk to me and say, I want to go live in this country or that country. How do I get there? And for a lot of them, the answer has got to be get yourself there and then find a job. So get yourself there for typically teaching, English teaching or PE teaching. And some countries will take you on a basic TEFL and then you can go work in a school and then find your way into football outside of that. And other ones, it's supporting a visa. And this stuff is really, really useful to know for coaches who want to go work abroad. What rights you have to actually work, live and travel in those countries. And it's not as easy as well. I'll just get all the CVs of all the email addresses of the top La Liga clubs, and I'll send them my CV, and hopefully one of them will take me. Do you personally think you would have the opportunity you've got now if you weren't able to speak so many languages?
Oh, God, no. No, 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 no. Even after I'd spoken to the president of the club, I'd done a report based on the old King's Lynn template, so I sent it off to him. He said, it's really good. And he spoke to me just before I was due to go down. He goes, yeah, thank you. He was like, thank you. He goes, I am a bit concerned about how we're going to get by with all the language. I said, well, I'm happy to sort of write it in French for you if you want. And I mean, my French isn't great, but I'm, you know, with using a bit of Google Translate and the like, I'm sure we can get by. And he said, well, come down anyway, meet the coach. And I was talking to them, and only two people in the room. There was five of them in the room. Only two of them understood English. So I was talking in English, first of all, and they were looking at Carlos going, what's he saying? And then Christian was saying it in French. Then Carlos was saying it in Portuguese. And I'm like, hang on a second. I understand what's being said. And I was saying bits, you know, I was joining in the conversation in French. And I'm like, they're talking Portuguese here. So, the coach is Portuguese. So then I was responding to him, and then I started talking to him in Spanish. And he was talking back to me in Portuguese. I'm like, I understand more or less what you're trying to say here. And I'm like, I'll talk to you. And we all shook hands then after that. It was like, okay, we can communicate to one another. And I mean, funnily enough, as life as a scout, you spend very little time at your own club because you're always elsewhere watching stuff. So most of the communication takes place over the phone. So it's a lot of typing and the like going on. But yeah, it'll always, my written French is better than my spoken French. So it's a lot easier to send messages through that way. And I don't know if we mentioned it on air or off air, but, you know, we do video reports. And that was the, you know, the big thing here. And it was a learning experience for me. And I mean, I thought, first of all, well, if I write it in French, surely that's fine for people. And then we got Portuguese, Luxembourgish speakers in the club who, they're French. Yeah, they can understand a bit of French, but they'd prefer it in Luxembourgish or Portuguese if you're giving them a written instruction anyway. So you do the, you know, the visual footage instead of a written report for people to read up on the players. So it's always, it has to be clips, and it's a whole new challenge that way. I was very surprised when they showed me how much video footage is available on the Luxembourgish league. I'd had my own Y-Scout account, and Y-Scout doesn't cover Luxembourg at all. But Insta has everything, I found out quite quickly, because the Luxembourgish Federation did a deal with VIO, and all the top two tier clubs here have VIO cameras in, and the footage goes straight to the television network that stream all the games from the top two tiers here. So, and the footage is stored online for the entirety of the season. And so anyone can log in and access any game on any team in the top two divisions of the league here, which has become an absolute godsend. So we can go on there and collect the footage and make the videos quite easily from it.
A lot more of the scouting and analyst jobs that we're getting are becoming remote. Mm-hmm. With this kind of technology, you can understand why. So let's talk about what you've got going on in Luxembourg. You've gone to meet the coach, you've gone to meet the players and been shown around the club, and now you're in the process of building something which sounds incredibly cool. So take us to the beginning and talk us through that.
Yeah, first of all, coach said, I want my reports. I want my opposition reports, attacking, defense, set pieces. I want it based on the previous three, four games. So my personal sort of scouting job is to then, you know, I watch the last four games of every team and produce the videos based on that. And I've been doing that since the start of the season. So, yeah, I'm watching four games a week, most weeks, which is brilliant, absolutely brilliant, especially as I have my commute to work in the morning for school is around one half of football, and my commute back in the evening is the other half of football. So it's a great journey for me with that. And after about a month of that, Jed Searson got in touch and said, Adam, really good stuff. I see you doing it. It's really great. And, you know, really happy, you know, that you've, especially as people like Jed and Tom and that knew what I was going through at the start of this year with, you know, in February when the invasion started. And then, you know, really great to see you, you know, you're on your feet and back running again. And when you need any help, you know, I've got guys finishing the courses, and do you, you know, is there anything they can do? And I was kind of like, well, managing this, but we've got zero on talent ID at the moment. So, you know, when I first spoke to Mr. President, he said, you know, we'll be very interested in you doing some talent ID if you want as well. But, you know, four games a week, that's enough for me with my teaching job and kids and the like. So if these guys are up for it, yeah, sure, he goes. Some of them, you know, because I'd worked with Jed on the Malawi. We'd been part of the Malawi scouting team at AFCON at the start of this year, which I didn't mention earlier, but you know, it's one I always slips my mind, but it was a great experience.
If I did something like that, I'd never shut up about it. So it's amazing for me. You've done something so cool and just flippantly forgot about it. That's amazing.
I have to apologize to Jed as well if he listens to, you know, when he listens to them. But yeah, it was great fun. We'll come back to that now and then. But yeah, so some of the guys from the Malawi team, join me, and some of the newer guys who sort of recently done their courses have come on. And we presently we have about 16 scouts dotted around the world. We've got a guy in Sri Lanka, got a guy in the States, a couple of Greek guys, French guy, a Swedish guy, and a few. Duncan, actually, who I know you've interviewed in Costa Rica.
Yes.
Yeah, Duncan's with me as well.
Brilliant.
And yeah, so we got a coach from Brighton who's coaching Costa Rica, helping me scout the Luxembourgish League. So it's, yeah, all working remotely. So what we're doing at the moment is we're trawling, you know, as I always say to a new recruit who's joining us, I'm like, I want to fish the whole league and see what's out there. And so we watch a game. Everyone watches a team a week, and we do a basic overview. And sort of my job then, like I go through the data that they send me, and I see if anyone pops out. And then when they pop out, they stand out based on what we're looking for as a team. And, you know, as many of the, you know, coaches listening to this will know, each league has its own sort of requirements that you need to meet, especially internationally. So we've got our own sort of key demographic that, you know, markers that we're looking for. And then we'll go deeper, you know, using Jed's language. We do the 360 on the player. Then we go all in, and we'll take a few games and we'll have a look at the player, how he's been over the last few months. And then we'll make a decision. Do we take him to the sporting director and the coaches to say, we found this guy, could be a good fit for the team? And we focus particularly on the second division because, as Mr. President said to me, he goes, we know the guys in the top division because we see them every week. We've played and we've been playing them for years. Probably 80% of the top division players we know. We also know which clubs' finances we can match and which ones are out of our league. But the second division, we don't. So that's where you can really add value to the club. So, you know, we've gone through them and we found some talent there. You know, either young Portuguese, Luxembourgish players, or young Balkan Luxembourgish players who, again, you know, in most cases, their parents moved to Luxembourg in the 90s and they're now growing up as Luxembourgish citizens. And most of them, sort of, you know, born between 2000 and 2005. And you know, trying to make a name in the game as well, and they've got the typical skill set you'd expect to see. So we picked a few out. Interestingly, now we sent some players across to the board, and yeah, they've liked what they've seen as well. So they're now looking at having a good look at these players, and they've gone on to the monitor list. And as we say, we'll take them through and hopefully. The deals which the guys in another part of the club will be making will hopefully be made, and we can see, you know, sort of the fruition of our good work come through, and maybe one or two of these guys start to play in the first team. It's, as I mentioned earlier, the club is financially stable. It's not a club that spends beyond its means. So if we can add a bit of value to the club, then it's something that's really going to help them take that next step. They've been in the Premier Division for 8 or 9 years now, but they've never challenged up the top, never got into Europe. They've not really troubled the relegation places. So if we can help them get closer to a Conference League spot, then all the better for it. And it's, you know, the nice thing is that these guys, like me, are getting a world of experience here. We're getting the ability to work in new environment. We're learning about a different style of football, learning about different skill sets as well. You know, remember a couple of the guys went first couple of games, it was, well, they won't make it in England. I went, well, they don't have to, they have to make it in Luxembourg, you know. And you're like, yeah, but over, you know, this was when we started it. Now we're a few months in, they're like, have another look at this guy. I think he might have something for our team. He's somebody that can add value to our team. I'm no longer thinking, well, they might play tier 7-8 in England, but no higher than that. It's, they could fit. They could be a fit for Mondorf's style of football. And the more we watch other teams play, yeah, our style of football and beat those teams. And, you know, we can see the weaknesses in those other teams. The nice thing is, very often I'll ask the guys to do a player review on one of our upcoming opposition. But whilst doing it, I'll send them a quick message and say, what did you think of them? You know, anything there we can use for the game that's coming up in a couple of weeks. So we're giving them just, there's a bit of opposition scouting going on alongside the talent hiding. Just, you know,
are you looking just at Luxembourg, or are you looking at like equivalent standard leagues, like lower leagues in France, Belgium, Germany, anywhere nearby to see if
we presently we're only looking in Luxembourg because, again, like I mentioned, there are some of the sort of intricacies of Luxembourgish football. There has to be X amount of Luxembourgish nationals in the match day squad. There is X amount of under 23s have to be in the match day squad here as well. And they're quite strict ones, purely on the basis of Luxembourg being a tiny country surrounded by having three much more powerful leagues on their doorsteps, and Holland just being an hour's drive across Belgium away as well. They need to protect Luxembourgish players and make sure that Luxembourgish players have the opportunity to play. And Mondorf in particular are one of the most vocal clubs in the fact that they want to see the Luxembourgish Prem being filled with talented Luxembourgish players. So yeah, we're focused purely at the moment on the Luxembourgish league, even though our first team squad has a number of French nationals, as we are about a kilometre from the French border. So it's, we do pick up the French guys, but you know, the long term plan is to have more and more Luxembourgish players coming in.
Now, talk me through the process. As someone who's never had a scout recommending players to me, how does it work? You identify someone you think is good. How do you then convince the coach or the sporting director that they're worth pursuing? And then what kind of criteria are you given to make sure that you are selecting the right kind of player? I mean, I can only relate to Football Manager in that sense.
I mean, first of all, we look at everyone. First and foremost, we'll be making our judgments on everyone we look at. And we'll be picking out players ourselves. But then I'll talk to sporting directors and say, okay, what are we looking at recruiting? There we go. Okay, right. And they'll say, we're looking at these positions. Have you found anyone that you find interesting? Say, well, we'll like these. But as a scout, we're not there trying to persuade people that this, we're there to say, this is who we think is good. So maybe you want to consider him. And it's a little bit different. You know, the coaches have their players. And, you know, one of the first things I was told when I joined this club was that the coach wants the opinions of scouts, and he is very interested in this, and this is something that he wants to build. So he wants to listen to the opinions. So we send it across, and then, as I say to my guys, we're not the decision makers. We're just there providing intelligence for the decision makers to make the decisions on. And for anybody that wants to get into scouting, you can't think, all right, I'm a scout, I'm going to be the one, you know, I know best, I know this guy, this is the one for the team. It's not you making the decision at the end of the day. Most clubs now, it's a sporting director, technical director, in conjunction with the managers who are making the decisions on this. Not us. We just provide, you know, added intelligence to the decision-making process, and that's what we do. So more, you know, one of the club ethoses is the more information we can get, the more data we can gather, the better the decision's going to be that we make. So, yeah, we were very happy to say that a couple of, I think I've proposed 5 or 6 players to the club from what we've collected. 2 of them, they've said, yeah, we're interested in these, we're going to have a closer look. The others, no, for various reasons and valid reasons as well. But we've said, fine, you know, we've suggested them. Doesn't work for you, that's fine with us. You know, we're not going to get upset about it. But yeah, it's that's our role. It's quite nice. You know, we provide it, but we don't have any other blame if it goes wrong. It's just, yeah, this is what we think. If you like it and if it works, great. If it doesn't.
Sure. Now, you mentioned earlier about the different languages and having to move away from written reports to using more video. Right. Is there anything else that you do with your reports, with your information, to make sure that it's understood properly or to be more visually appealing? Because I know some coaches, that they just want to know 2-3 key points, bang, get it over and done with, and other people want to see a bit more video so they can be convinced and see kind of the relative context of a player. So what do to make sure that they understand your reports, or that at least the key parts are highlighted?
I mean, I've sent the written reports along as well for those guys that speak English. Because I think, yeah, for those who can understand it and they want to read it, it's great. A sporting director will understand English as well. Then what we do then is we'll look, based on how the report's structured, the guys who are watching the game that they're producing the report on, I'll say to them, pick out a key, you know, can you timestamp something in each of these areas that you think was really key, and send that across to me so that I'll look at it there in that game. We'll take that one out as a key part of the game to put in. So we'll give them footage from a variety of games. And when I'm choosing the games that we're going to look at, it won't always be the guy's best game, because I really don't want to give that. You know, I think one of the dangers when producing video reports, I always say to agents when they send me players, is I don't want to see a highlight reel of a footballer. I want to see what the footballer can do first. I always ask an agent, send me the game tape. I don't want to see his highlight reel, because yeah, we cannot always hide what something that a guy can't do. So yeah, my guys, when they're watching games, will always tell me what the guy can't do, because we don't want to send them a duffer. But if we see somebody who's like, right, might be 18, 19, and has got a weakness in the game, well, we'll say, look, this is his weakness. Have a look at it. But it's something that we think could be coached out of him as well. But he's got X, Y, and Z that we think will really add value to the team as well, so they can see it. So we try to do that. There are a few little gizmos that we're looking at the moment. Finances don't allow, to be perfectly honest. But if we can get them, then we're going to add it in to make it, just to sort of visually make what we're trying to get a lot clearer for it. You know, there are some technical packages that you can use that make the videos a lot more, they enhance the videos, the quality of the videos from an analytical side. But what we can show at the moment through the videos is clear enough for those people to see what the player can provide and what the player needs to work on as well. There was a winger I've sent across, and yeah, we showed him trying to receive a free kick from inside his own half. He was out on the wing, and yeah, it was an awful touch. So, and as it was an awful touch, we put it in because we thought we need to see that he still needs to, he's still got that to work on. And he played a dangerous pass in his own half in the game that we watched. So we're like, we need to put that in there so they see that he's got that. But we also put in the blistering pace, the 2 feet, the way his ball control and his finishing, that went in there because that's what caught our attention first of all. So that, you know, we want to create that honest picture so that they can make, you know, it's the right decision. I think I sort of was waffling on the way I am here. Sort of, you know, sort of to clarify my thoughts, it's that we don't want the club just to sign the player because we'd like him. We want the club to sign the player because we want the player to enhance the team. And it's a different mindset that way, that, you know, we can't send the player just because we've got a nice feeling and, oh, yes, go. Because he's going to let the team down somewhere down the line and the coach won't know about it and he's going to look at you and go, what the hell you sent him for? You need somebody because you go, right, if you fix this, yeah, you've got, you could have a right player on your hand here who will take the club to the next step. And it's that slight change in mindset is, for me, it's key for, you know, getting the best out of a scouting department.
So if we look at it now from coaches' point of view, because there's been so many advancements in scouting, in online education, in video analysis software, becoming more affordable, and that a lot of people can get it on their laptops. What kind of advice do you think you have for the average coach who just wants to run through a game or two, give some feedback on their players? Any kind of advice on how they should present the information, what kind of things they should look for, or even just techniques that you've learned over the years? Because some players got the attention span of a goldfish, but you still need to work with them. They still need to get better. You can't, he's thick, don't worry about it. How are you still going to, how can coaches still get to those players? And you know, what can they do? And I'm being succinct. Here I am waffling in my questions. I'll shut up. Next speech.
I mean, moving into clipping this year for players, I see it's the way to go. I will get the link into Malawi now. And, you know, the Malawi team, we were, one of my jobs there was to, I was on penalties. And, you know, I had to go through all the penalties that the opposition had took. And we made it, they were just there. Goalkeeper coach sat down, looked at them, charted it. It was there nice and quick. And it worked. And they said, this is really useful. You know, as a coach, you know your team, you know your players. You've probably signed them or you've been working with them on the pitch, you know, on the training pitch for a long time. You know what they need. You know somebody that you can sit down and talk to and go through in depth. You know somebody that probably wants to have a quick flick through the clips on his phone or on a tablet and you can say, right, here it is. Personally, I think video footage will be the way it moves forward from written footage. I think that's just the way, you know, human nature's developing. The attention span does get shorter. And that will be the thing, as long as the videos are done in a way that players are getting what they need. And as a coach, you have to make sure you're getting the footage that will allow you to give the feedback to the players what they need. I spoke with a young scout a couple of years ago, and he went, if there's one thing I could buy, what would it be? You know, if I could go to the board and say, this is the one thing I need to get this scouting department off the ground, I was like, you know, a widescreen camera. You know, every coach, if you're going to your chairman, that's what you need. You need a place to perch it somewhere around the ground so that you can get that footage first and foremost. something that's good enough to get the pitch so you can get the flow of the play, the formations, how the guys are positioning. And then with that, you can work with it and you can show people what they're doing. Without that, you can't get started. I mean, I've looked at footage from other clubs, and I've seen clubs in the National League, in the, you know, in Tier 6 as well, North and South, where they haven't got that. And it's a hell of a lot harder to get that message across. So just get that camera right so you've got that good footage, and from there you can really, really do something good with it.
You've brought back a lot of very bad, stressful memories of trying to get a volunteer to record a game, and just how zoomed in they are and how they follow the ball, and the footage almost becomes useless. And I've watched some really, really old games, and even from early 2000s, you see the camera is way more zoomed in than it is now. And there are some leagues which are just better to watch because, for instance, in Spain, the camera's usually able to get both touchlines in one shot. And whenever I go to matches, people I'm with want to sit near the front so they can see the players. I feel blind. I can't see what's going on. I want to sit at the back. So,
back row.
Yeah, so that I don't even have to move my head. It's just my eyes that go left. I can see both goalkeepers in the same shot. And it's hard because it feels like a lot of the information you get, you miss a lot of information, and what you do get is without context. So you got a player that went for a 1v1 and they were successful in going around the defender, but what was beyond that, what passing opportunities may they have missed? Does that 1v1 actually become a 1v2 if you're not careful? Well, because you are so zoomed in, we don't know if that was a good decision or not.
Mm-hmm. This is why I would say that camera is key. And if you can get one, you'll find the cameraman is less of a concern because the angle that you're getting from the camera straight away gives greater coverage of the pitch. So I was watching a game from Blundell Park, Grimsby, and beautiful footage. Absolutely beautiful. It's one of the easiest games to write a report on because you could see everything. And just, you know, it was like watching a chessboard, you know. It was just so professionally done, so well done for a club that was in the National League at the time. And it was very, very impressive. As you go to some and cameras behind a stanchion, you know, how am I supposed to watch that? So it's, yeah. And as a scout, it's funny you say that. First thing I do, like, I get to the ground about an hour beforehand here, and I take my seat on the back row. And I go seat inside these days, and it is always straight to the back. I want to be as close to the halfway line as possible, as far back as possible as I can get. Every time I'm in, wherever I am in this country, I went to Victoria Rossport, and their seats were down by the corner flag. So I had to stand, and there was only two tiers of standing. So that was a hard one to do. But yeah, everywhere else, you need that bit of height and centrally positioned so you can have it. So you're not moving your head.
No. Every now and again, you see a thread on Twitter, either a Dropbox link or a YouTube playlist of the men's or women's World Cup games recorded on tactical cam, and it's bliss just to be able to watch it, because even TV's got better. I still feel like you miss a whole lot because you can't see how the lines or the units work together, and the space are coming, or what parts of the pitch they're letting you play in, or what parts of the pitch they're trying to show you into. So anyway, last question. Just because we're short on time, thoroughly enjoyable, and I could go on forever. What kind of advice do you have for someone who wants to make it in football as a scout or an analyst?
or watch them as many games as you can. Write the reports. Be ready to do the hard yards. For me, it's about who you meet. I was given very good advice. Whenever you go to any football game, leave with at least one person's phone number. And it could be somebody from the club who you say, right, I'm here today. I'm going to watch the game. I'm going to write a report. Can I send it to you? And there'll be somebody that will go, yes. And somebody will appreciate it. So if you want to get into scouting, yeah, you need to be ready to put in the hard yards. I volunteered. I did two years of scouting without earning a single penny and loved every minute of it and would not have given it, done anything else for this world. I really, really enjoyed it. When I was offered money this year to do it, I was a bit surprised because I wasn't expecting it. I then said, are you sure? He went, yeah, we have a budget, so we will pay you for the work you're doing. I went, well, thank you very much. But I would have happily done this year for free as well. And because it's an enjoyment you get from it. It's watching a game, being able to understand it, understand how it's worked, and to express it. It's a real enjoyment. And it's just a great experience for it. If you don't get that, if you're doing it because you want to be further up the leagues and you want to be making your living from it and the like, yes, scouting's probably not for you.
Like a lot of these jobs, it sounds like you have to absolutely love it and to endure quite a lot of pain and hard work before you get anywhere. Adam, thank you very much for your time. Fascinating story, fascinating journey. Thank you for sharing it with us and wish you all the best.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Hope you enjoyed that. Thanks to Adam for coming on. If you haven't heard the recent news on the jobs front about China opening up, I suggest you go back and listen to the interview with Matt Ward and David Webber. The pair talk to us all about the opportunities and how to get them. We've even had a couple come through on the jobs board. If you're struggling for full-time work, consider life abroad. Thanks for listening and see you next time.